Thank you all for coming out to True Tales Told Live, the Central Peninsula storytelling event. If you have no idea that that is going on and you're just here to enjoy Odie's, you might be a little confused, but I guarantee you will enjoy it and think it a happy accident. We definitely appreciate Odie's for letting us do this here, so please purchase dinner and beverages accordingly. My name is Jenny Nyman. I'm with KDLL Public Radio, and this is the back of, oh, and the front of Caitlin Bodla. She and I and Peggy Erkenaf in another hat is with the school district, have been doing this for, we were trying to count. We think this is number 7 so far. So if anyone's familiar with the Moth or with Arctic Entries in Anchorage, that's kind of what we do here. So we invite people from the community to think of a story along a theme, come up here and tell it live with no notes on a certain time frame. So the idea behind storytelling in general, of course, is we are all humans, no matter where we're from and what our experiences or our cultural or socioeconomic background. There are things that we all have in common, and stories are a great way to tap into that. Yet they also allow us to share what's different about ourselves and have, you know, kind of unique and diverse viewpoints. So stories are that very fun intersection between bringing together and yet showing diversity. And I think you will hear some of that tonight. We have 6 very brave, very talented folks tonight who are going to tell a story on the theme of Lighten Up, Tales of Escape from the Dark. We figured that was very fitting for December because, as you may or may not have noticed, it's dark outside. That happens a lot in Alaska in December. So we wanted to be seasonal and kind of celebrate that and give people a chance to think about what the dark means to them, what getting out of the dark means for them. And as with all of our themes, people can take that as literally or as figuratively or whatever otherly way that they want to do that. So that is up to the storytellers, and we can't wait to hear what they have to say. Our next storytelling event is going to be February 2nd, right here, also at 6 p.m. And the theme for that is Lessons Not Learned. So February 2nd, of course, is Groundhog's Day, so the whole circle repeating itself kind of thing. We wanted to tap into that. So Lessons Not Learned, plenty of opportunity. I think we all probably have had moments where we should have learned something and didn't, and perhaps learned it the hard way the next time. So be thinking about that. If this is a thing that you would like to do, we absolutely welcome it. You can get a hold of Caitlin or myself. You can check us out on Facebook, True Tales Told Live. Message us there, post, or our contact information is available. So we have a rehearsal kind of workshop thing before the live event. So if it's something that you've never done before but you want to give it a try, we love to have new people. We haven't had anybody die on us yet, so I feel pretty good about those numbers. I don't think it's going to happen tonight either, so it's fun. It's definitely worth doing. I know public speaking is not everybody's favorite thing in the world to do, but when you do it, even a couple minutes into being up here and the nerves kind of start to work themselves out, it's a very cool feeling of accomplishment. So please keep that in the back of your mind as we get started tonight.
We have a poet who's going to set the stage for us with Darkness and Light. So Carrie, come on up.
That thing with feathers. Hope is the thing with feathers, or so the poet wrote. It beats against the breast, fighting the chains and the cage of caution and hard lessons and regret. Hope is an untamable creature. It slips between bars, too weak to hold it captive. It lifts and dips and whirls, falling updrafts of possibilities in dreams and whispers and wistful wishes. Hope is a thing with power to rise and rise again. It holds the line, refusing retreat from the threat of disappointment and cynicism and despair. Hope is a savior and the victor, the hero of love, the merciful touch, and rescue for the lost. Hope is a lighthouse beacon. It's the joyful freedom. Hope is the light in the dark. Thank you.
All right, our next storyteller is Dave Atchison. We're going to get him up here first because he was kind of nervously eyeing the door, so we want to make sure everyone looks at him, so if he tries to make a break for it, he will be shamed into coming up to the microphone first. So Dave, as I'm sure a lot of you know, works at the college in one hat, does a lot of environmental advocacy in another hat, and is a local author and is not unused to being in front of a microphone, so this is his first time doing storytelling tonight. It is definitely a bit of a different experience, so we appreciate him being brave and sharing a story. Dave, come on up.
Darkness in the light. So when I was 19, a young lad, I ended up in Seward at the Forest Acres campground. Back then it was free, and there was a bunch of us that had come to Alaska looking for adventure, and kind of, because we had no money, kind of circled our wagons around this one campsite, and it was a kind of an odd bunch of people, and I was 19 or 20, I'd never seen the ocean before, and there was this guy about 10 years older than me, hanging around, who was in the campground, kind of rough around the edges, but I kind of hung out with him and kind of looked up to him in a weird way, and this is before like tattoos were cool. This guy had a lot of tattoos. This is, you know, back when you were either a punk rocker, a Navy man, or you'd been in the big house if you had tattoos. And this guy had, probably was in that big house. And he actually, I would find out much later, was wanted for questioning in a murder. And he kept talking about commercial fishing. I was planning on working in the cannery there in Seward. And he kept talking, let's go commercial fishing. I got a job on a boat. And so there I was gonna go out in a seiner. And if a boat needs two green deckhands 2 days before the fishery's about to open, you do not wanna go out on that boat. The skipper of the boat was a decent fisherman, but he was a renowned screamer. He was a, he'd just scream and scream and scream at you, and I was terrified. I went out in this boat, this crusty old guy. I say old. At the time, I thought he was old. He was probably not much older than I am now, but he seemed like ancient guy, and he was crusty. He was missing a couple fingers and just scream and yell, and I thought my name was God Damn It Dave. Even if, you know, I was getting cookies, God Damn It Dave, go get me those cookies. And I was terrified with him, so I was buddying up with a murderer because I was so terrified of the old skipper. And so we were out fishing and it was rough, and I, both figuratively and literally, and I would make plot, we were fishing in Lower Cook Inlet, and I'd plot, like, if I climb over that mountain and over the ice field and at low tide, I might be able to get out of here. I was always plotting my escape. It was really rough. The guy just was, he was brutal. But after about 10, and there was no learning factor. It was like, grab that. You know, he'd say something. I didn't know any terms or anything. I'd never been on the ocean. I didn't even know what a survival suit was, let alone where they were or how to put one on or any of that stuff. And but after about 10 days or so, I was starting to figure things out a little bit. And we just made a set, and the cork line was hanging up over. We'd made a couple of good sets. And the cork line was just hanging over the back of the, over the stern of the boat, and I was trying to be careful. I was always trying to be careful, and I took like an errant step, and that cork line gave way, and I went overboard. And this was a pretty low-slung boat that it didn't look that far. But when you fall off the back of a boat, I felt like I was falling forever. And this is where the darkness comes in. I was going down under that water, and it was cold out, had lots of clothing on, rain gear, heavy boots, and down, down, down I was going. It was like slow motion, and the bubbles were rising up like a scuba diver. And I wasn't afraid. What I was worried about what the old man was going to say when I got to the surface. It was dark. This is the dark part. And slow motion, I'm coming up and I'm like, oh my God, he's going to be pissed. And I could see the sun up there coming up, coming up, coming up, and I broke the surface and I swore and hit the water because I was mad at myself for falling. And he was yelling, but not at me. He was yelling at the other deckhands to get in the skiff and get me out of the water. And they pulled me up, they got me up on deck, and I was like, oh man. He was like, don't worry about it. It's happened to everybody. And he slapped me on the back, and I was really surprised. And that night, he was really nice to me. I was really surprised. He just, don't worry. So it was kind of an initiation. It was into the light, and it was a bit of a baptism. And after that, I kind of felt more like a commercial fisherman. And that's my Into the Light story.
Survived the near drowning, but you lived to tell the tale, and you lived through telling the tale, so that's a triple win. Up next, Jackie Michaels. Jackie said that we should introduce her as Jackie Michaels is exhausted. I'm going to go a little farther, though. She's also a local author. You've seen her before in The Clarion. She's contributed to some chicken soup books as well. Probably seen her name around other places, and this is her return round at True Tales. Jackie right here is proof positive that it's not as bad as it might seem from sitting out in the audience, because she was super nervous last time and she did it and she's back to do it again. So we definitely appreciate that. Come on up, Jackie.
I caught the travel bug. Yep, in the last 30 days, I've covered about 16,000 miles. That is impressive for me. Anyway, the second trip involved flying out on Thanksgiving Day to JFK and getting into a dump truck we would later call Donkey, and driving all the way back here, which meant that we had to go through the Alcan Highway. You know, that part by Lake Clark where there's no cell phone service and you're going downhill and it's sort of like a left turn before you hit hell. And like there's possibility of running into a herd of buffalo at some kind of blind corner. And then there's like that big hill and the descent and the corners, and the semi comes at you with like these blinding lights. And oh my goodness, who knew? I have a great case of severe post-traumatic stress anxiety meltdown syndrome about traveling. Who knew? I didn't. It was a memorable trip. The other trip, the first one, the one I'm here to tell you about tonight, is about flying down south to see my family earlier in November. I was leaving. And this is what I'm here to tell you. I'm here to tell you how to get a private seat on a very crowded airplane. 1995, I'll take no donations at the end. So there I am, ready to leave Alaska on my first solo, no husband, no kids trip. And I'm at that part of the Alaska airline where you weigh your baggage. And one of my bags were 4.5 pounds overweight. I had to hand my husband the one pair of snazzy dress shoes I owned and the one maybe chick outfit and a few other goodies. Because if I didn't lighten my load, I'd have to pay $75. My other piece of luggage was Alaska ghetto gear. It was a tattered cooler secured with. Inside of it was, yeah, gifts of love. I saw another traveler with similar baggage and I felt a sense of kinship with them. Anyway, I'm on my way, and I'm going to go on my trip. And before, so anyway, we're on the airplane, and all of a sudden I'm in Seattle, in that place that I think that Dr. Seuss must have been when he wrote this. I was in Seattle, in the waiting place, waiting for the fish to bite, or waiting for the wind to fly a kite, or waiting around for Friday night, or waiting perhaps for their Uncle Jake, or a pot to boil, or a better break, or a string of pearls, or a pair of pants, or a wig with curls, or another chance. Everyone is just waiting. Have you ever been in the Seattle airport? Well, I had never been there on my own on the loose, but I had a credit card. And I had an idea, like Dr. Seuss, I wondered if he spied a nice little place that featured pictures of pretty drinks with festive titles or adventurous sounding titles of pretty colors. I had myself one or two. It was really good. And then, just then, I had a brilliant idea. And I will tell you that me and brilliant and idea are not congruent terms. But I didn't let that stop me, because I was assaulted by the warm aroma of espresso with some kind of chocolate froth yumminess. So I topped off the tropical drinks with the marshmallow espresso stuff. It was so good that when I got back on the airplane, I took the last 2 ounces onto the plane with me. I wanted to savor every expensive drop of that. And I put it in that little pocket thing in front of me. And the stewardess did that thing, you know, she always does it. We were on our way. Except she told us that we better leave our seatbelts on, because there might be a little bit of turbulence. A little bit of turbulence. Doesn't that sound so genteel? It's kind of like saying, oh, wasn't that a pleasant little mushroom cloud? So the lady in the back screaming intermittently, and the plane is sort of lurching. It was very hot. The man next to me wore a suit. And the math didn't really add up, because there were still 2 ounces in that 16-ounce container, and I had drinking way like more like 40 ounces. And then I remembered this coat. I'm here to tell you that bleach works. Tropical drinks are colored. And I have great aim. I got everything in the coat. But the man next to me had no sense of humor, and somehow or another finagled himself to get into another seat. Well, I looked around, and I couldn't believe it. There was not an empty seat on that entire plane, except for me. I had 2 empty seats right next to me. So if you are traveling and trying to get into the light, like I'm gonna go to Fiji pretty soon, and I may or may not want to have my own seat, I may stick to the tropical drinks, or I don't know. We'll see what happens. Merry Christmas, everybody.
With no further ado, let me introduce to you our next storyteller. Carrie, actually, I remember Carrie, when I was about this tall, was one of my mom's students at Nanilchik High School. I remember running into you at Music in the Park a little while ago, and you're like, you know, I want to tell a story sometime. And so now she is. This is her first time telling a story. She loves to kayak, to write, and to dance. And she spends her life surrounded by children at work, so bless you. And she can always be bought off with chocolate. So give her lots of love. Your first time, come on up, Carrie, and share your story.
So I want to tell you guys a little bit about one of my favorite activities with my kids. Growing up, I hated road trips. And it makes sense because Jackie's experience on the plane was me every time we got in the car. So, you know, every time we piled in the car, eventually somebody was gonna be yelling, "Stop the car, Carrie's gonna puke." So it's a little ironic that now that I'm an adult, one of my favorite things to do is to take my kids on a road trip. I like the drive, I love looking at scenery, I really like having a captive audience. So it's not any surprise that last winter, when it was time to take my daughter for yet another appointment with a specialist in Anchorage, I was like, okay, we're ready, let's pack it up. And I had to let the dogs out before we go, and I'm looking, and there's just this beautiful pool of perfect moonlight spilling through some leafless birches onto the snow, which is incandescent, iridescent. And I just paused, and I was just looking. Then I take a few deep breaths of cold air, and it's time to get going. So we leave the house, and pink is just tinging the mountains, and it's topping the trees. And I say to my daughter, who's in the passenger seat, "Look, look how pretty that is." She barely looks up from her book and says, "I know, Mom." Well, you have to understand, my daughter's an artist, and I'm thinking she's gonna love every bit of this, every one of the 40-some road trips we've taken together. My mother was an artist, too. I'm sandwiched somewhere in the middle with not much talent, but a pretty healthy appreciation for beauty, so I feel it's incumbent upon me to point it out at every opportunity. So as we're driving, I'm pointing out the views and this river and that tree and just really enjoying myself. And we stop to take pictures because I'm a puker in every sense of the way. So not only do I get sick if I'm in the back seat or on a boat, but I have to stop and take pictures. And growing up in an Elchick, they weren't tourists that came. They were pukers because somebody got sick in that motorhome on the way there. So that's me. I'm the one that is the Alaskan stopping on the side of the road taking pictures like every other idiot. So I'm just out here to take pictures. I'm pointing out the view. My daughter is a teenager. She's done this with me enough times. She gets tired of it. "Mom, can you turn up the radio?" "Okay, I can do that. But what are you going to do when you're a grown up and you're going on road trips without me singing to you at unreasonable decibels the whole way?" She doesn't seem to be that impressed. But I'm a sweet, kind, and loving mother, so I go ahead and I turn up the radio and I sing the lyrics to every song that comes on. Now, she thought she was going to hush me up, but not only am I singing, but now I'm yelling above the music. "Look, Chuck, you see that? That's so gorgeous!" She's not very impressed, but I figure I've earned some paybacks after, you know, toddler temper tantrums in the store, and smart aleck remarks, and whatever tribulations are coming up in the teenage years that I am not looking forward to. So we keep on driving, and I keep being annoying because I just can't help it, I'm Mom. And as we're driving, I'm looking at the mountains, and I'm thinking, you know, I see these same mountains and these same rivers every time, and yet they're never the same. They always are changing. The way the light shines on them, the way it reflects, the valleys that we can see, the crags, the precipices, they look different every time. And I just can't get over it. And that's why I keep pointing it out to my daughter. But I'm also thinking, you know, it occurs to me, these mountains and these rivers, they are a lot like people. We can never, no matter how well we know somebody, really, truly understand every part about them. Our souls have so much depth and so many heights to them that we don't know everything, and the light can only show so much at any one time. So as we pull into the doctor's office, that thought sticks with me. And I look at my daughter and I'm thinking, man, she has really matured over the past 40-some trips to Anchorage, and many times we've been to this specialist office. And, you know, it's not just the way she's grown, but the way she looks at the world, the way she thinks about things, the way she does things. You know, and no matter what, I can never fully know her. She's an enigma, and I'm lucky enough to get a front seat to watch as she becomes. But for today, the doctor chats with us. He does his exam. He looks over his notes, and then he gives us a gift. He tells us, "You don't have to come back for a year." I'm in such shock, because, again, 40-some trips, that I don't even think until he's walking out the door and say, "Thank you." I think he gets it. And so we celebrate. we go browse the hospital gift store, and we go to the secondhand store and buy her some much needed jeans because for some reason she keeps growing. And then we go to the arts or the used bookstore and we buy her some art books. Remember, she's an artist. Then we start on our way home with the music playing, and I'm singing, of course, and she's looking at her art books, and I'm still annoyingly pointing out every pretty view along the way. We pull into town, and the timing is perfect. The sunset is just painting the mountains pink and purple. The trees are just glowing. We are laughing, and life is good.
Next up, we have Meryl Sikorsky. That's you, Meryl. Why are you looking at me like I'm insane? You agreed to do this. Although, I kind of like the strategy now that I'm thinking of it. Maybe I'll just say next up is Bill Larned! Bill Larned, come on down! See how many people I can actually get to come up and do this. Thanks for being here, Meryl.
I'm glad to be here.
Meryl is a return storyteller as well. If you don't know him by sight, you probably know him by voice. He does a lot on the radio and is the founder, mover, and shaker behind Caring for the Kenai, among many other pursuits, Rotary, and on and on and on. And away you go.
Return, I wasn't supposed to be asked back. Because, I'm getting there. The first story I told was the detail of how I was conceived. And so I knew I wouldn't be asked back. And this morning I was looking for a place where Diane and I could come out tonight that might be kind of fun. But my smartphone really gets me confused because it doesn't keep the dates on that straight. And I don't know whether this was this week or supposed to be next week, or if the Kenai Watershed Farm open house was last night or wherever I was yesterday. But my phone usually keeps me in places. So I sent a couple texts this morning, one to Peggy and one to Caitlin. Peggy Urganeth just came back from Hawaii, and she was the first to answer. It's tonight, and we need a storyteller. Do you have one? That's like asking if the Pope is Catholic. And she said, you'll get a free beer. I said, hey, free beer, I'm in, okay? And so then Caitlin responded, Meryl, keep it PG. When I was a kid, PG was pregnant, right? So I definitely have a pregnant story to tell you. But, some of the words that I have to use to describe the story, I don't know if they're exactly PG. So I have inserted words such as scat. So I just want you to know that I've been censored. And so I won't say that tonight. Okay, but so the theme is lighten up. Where's Caitlin? Lighten up, Caitlin. Okay, just lighten up. It'll be okay. Okay, I got to set the stage because this is Darkness to Light. Okay, and so I was born, back in Michigan, and my dad was from the old country, and you didn't get married until you built a house to live in. So my dad did indeed build a house, and he built a house out of stone. And these were huge stones. The doorposts were cut with one stone and then another on. The fireplace, the hearth, was one stone that spanned it. And he cut and he broke all those stones and hauled them in, and that was, it was kind of like a hobbit house. Scary place to live. My friends would never come over and spend the night. There was a basement in this house, okay? And in the basement there was a oil-fired furnace that roared. Okay, we're talking back in the 50s now, okay? Okay, now, so over here is the garage. Okay, and you're in the garage, and then there's a little door that came in, and there was like a utility room. And in the utility room, there was a freezer, a box freezer, okay? And you would drop your boots, and in the wintertime, you put your galoshes. Anybody remember galoshes? Okay, your galoshes, there was a little place between the freezer and the wall where the heat blew out. And of course, your galoshes were wet, so they stored their galoshes in that space, okay? Now, that's there. Over here is the breakfast nook, where we always ate. Okay, it was a formal house. It was a living room and entry parlor and so forth in other places, but that's insignificant. That's the important place to remember. And the breakfast nook. Now, down this hall, okay, down here was my parents' bedroom, all the way at the end. And almost to the end of that was a bathroom. Okay. Now, to get from here, the breakfast nook, over to the bathroom, you had to go by the stairway that went downstairs where the furnace was. Now, why adults think it's funny to scare the scat out of their children, I don't know. But there will be a moral here, and you will never do it again. Because this is a true story, okay? My dad told me that down there lived the boogeyman. I was 3 years old, right? Okay, boogeyman. Dad also was kind of tight. He never left a light switch on. There was never light where there was darkness, you know, because that cost money. So when you were eating over here, the rest of the house was totally dark, except for the furnace downstairs. So after dinner, if you've had a lot of things to drink, you gotta pee, right? Okay, now you got a choice. You can come through the darkness, past where the boogeyman lives, you know, and go down and try and find a light switch to turn on the light switch so you can pee in the bathroom. That's not an option for a three-year-old. I mean, really, you want to get eaten by a boogeyman? You do?
Yeah.
No, man, I didn't. I'm still here. You're not going to be here when you're my age if you get eaten by a boogeyman. No way. Okay, so what does a three-year-old figure? Heat source. Air evaporates moisture, right? Hey, I'm a smart kid. I'm Polish. Okay, so the boogeyman versus coming over here, okay? You can't see me from there opening the door and peeing where it's going to dry and it's going to go away, right? And blow away. I'm still here because I didn't get eaten by the boogeyman. And my dad and mom both passed away not knowing why their feet smelled so terrible.
Next up, we have another return storyteller, Miss Hetty Huss.
Well, the postcard reads, "Land of the Midnight Sun, Boulder Dash, it's dark, damn dark." And Alaskans need ways to escape to the light. I myself have come up with some ideas that free me from the blackened state. And I, like Martha Stewart, would like to share those ideas with you tonight.
Oh, by the way, you people might want to be taking notes.
You have a number two pencil? Well, here we go then. First, you can grab an arc welder and make a real flash. Then you can celebrate the birthday of the oldest person you know. Light those candles up on that cake. And snap apart those gas-filled necklaces that you get at amusement places. Stack them high like a Maasai in Africa. Make s'mores. Never let an aurora borealis pass you by. Oh, let's see if my scroll list. Santa left me this scroll. Yeah. Oh, and take your pillow for sure. Take your pillow and go into your chest freezer, filled, I'm sure, with salmon. There's always a little bit of light in there. If not, you can make a picnic lunch in front of your fridge with that 40-watt bulb. You can also call Appalachia to get a helmet from that miner that doesn't need it anymore. Or you could wrap yourself in Roman candles and carry a bit. Mama, mama! Hey, mama, don't take that chrome away. And especially not my flash. Drag out that old John Travolta disco ball. Invite an arsonist over. Fill a menorah. Go to your inner light. And keep your Christmas tree lights up all season. So, excuse me, I'm sorry. Well, thank you so much for being here tonight. I really appreciate it. And I want all of you and yours to have a very merry and bright, lighten up Christmas and New Year's and all of them. Thank you for coming.
Awesome, wonderful, and original, and some illegal suggestions in there. We don't necessarily endorse everything everyone says on stage, but we appreciate everything everyone says on stage. So thank you for that, Eddie. We have one more, Caitlin, one more speaker this evening. She's nodding yes. All right. So that would be Mr. Steve Schoonmaker. Steve is new to us at True Tales. He is not new to telling stories. He does it through poem. He does it through a song. He sometimes does it with a guitar. He always does it from his heart. So we're looking forward to hearing what you have to say, Steve. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you, and thank Caitlin. She rousted me. Come on now. I've been saying I'd do it for a while. Anyway, light and dark. Well, you know how it gets dark here. What can we do about it? Can't change the physics of it. Okay, anyway, back in the late 70s when I got out of high school, I had some good friends of mine that came in from the bush. I won't mention who they are. Some of you guys might know. Their dad was a teacher out there. Well, they got Kenai, they got kind of wild child, you know. And Kenai was pretty open and loose back then, the 70s anyway. Make a long story short, when we got graduated, my friend's dad said, hey, you know, you're one of Brian's good friends that I like, and we need to get him out of here. We need to get him out of town. So he flew us out across the inlet and dropped us off in Old Chapman, a little trapping cabin. No contact with nobody. I had to make beans, you know, I was barely weaned, you know, and Brian knew a few things, and so we dropped us off. And we spent the winter. Got a few snafus, that's another whole story. But it kind of got me hooked on leaving town. So I decided I wanted to do that, and I saved my money over the season, salmon season and stuff. I saved like $2,500 up. Me and this other guy rented a beaver and flew across the inlet. We built a door. I just had a few different things, real basic. And we started trapping. Landed there in the Ouija on the lake. You know, and I'll confess, it's all national park now, and guys like me that had to run out of there. But that was all history. So we went over there and we built a little cabin, 11 by 11, and started trapping. Well, you know, I mean, back in town, my friends are all going to the Rainbow and partying and all this stuff, you know, just out of high school. That was their whole life, and we left that world completely and went out there. And I always read Bradford Angier, Survival of the Wild, stuff like that. I was into that stuff, you know. So it was a whole new world we entered. And a lot of snafus. I only got 7 minutes. I don't want to go too far into it. But I remember that it was so exciting, this whole new world. And now we're reading signs, we're trapping, we're trying to get in the heads of these animals, you know. lots of energy then, you know. I spent all day in a 45-pound pack hiking, you know. And then at Christmas time come, we'd have KFQD, KNI sometimes in Anchorage. And there was no talk radio. KNI was rock station. KFQD at night would have Herb Shaman, Desperate and Dateless, and stuff like that. We'd tune into that, you know. It hardly really come in, you know. I remember at Christmas time, I gave Doug a snowshoe hair. He gave me a spruce hand. You know, really super busy. You know, once a month we had this thing. It was called Sun Maid's Day, where, you know, the sun made raisins with a pretty gal on there holding the grapes. She's still on there. Same gal. Carved that little thing out and put it on the wall. We dedicated a day. It was Sun Maid's Day. It was to feasting and partying and stuff. You know, a lot of times what would happen is, you know, we'd be on the trail a bunch. So we didn't spend time together in the cabin, which is critical in some ways in a situation like that. We wanted to get together and celebrate this thing, you know. And we had a big bag, old homegrown shake that we brought back. We'd make pancakes with it, you know, and celebrate now and then with a bottle of vodka and some Tang. It was nasty, you know. That really was the point, you know. We got out there, and so over time, you know, it takes a while to get into the habit of these kind of things. You leave town, you get in this whole world. You wouldn't think that leaving for 3 or 4 months from town where you don't use a bath, the toilet, or you're around people and stuff would change things much. You get in your whole different world, you know. And it takes a while to understand these animals and the whole intrigue of it. And I could go into a long story, but I'll say that, you know, as it got more daylight, we had more time to get out. And it built. It went fast, so fast, so fast. The first year was February, it's over, you know. And I can remember my buddy sitting with me, and we had a little bit of vodka and Tang, and he said, "Man, you know, we got to go back to town now." I said, "Yeah, wow, you know, no, we're kind of looking forward to it, but it seemed like we'd been there like 3 years almost. You know, it went by like that, you know." And he goes, "You know what's going to happen, man? You know, when you skin these animals out, you put them on stretchers. You come in with this lynx, for instance, and there's a lynx. You see this lynx? It's on your lap. You skin the thing out. You put it on a stretcher. You come to town, people say, 'Is that a lynx?' I said, 'No, that's not a lynx.' He said, 'Man, you know, some fancy lady in New York could be wearing this thing. She didn't even know what a lynx looks like.' And people would tell me, they think, 'This is what a lynx looks like.' You know, said, 'They don't even know this people, Val. They don't know this stuff.' And I'd look at him. We just felt self-sized. And it was like, 'Yeah, I know, man.' And it was like Spaceship Orion was going to pick us up and take us back to town. I remember distinctly coming in and flying over and seeing the cars down there. And I was like, 'Here it comes, you know.' And I was excited to be there, but in a way I felt this kind of weird apprehension. And we got to town. Everybody was telling me a mile a minute. Everything was bright. It was just like, and you wouldn't think that it would change that much. You know, and I remember we get to my friend's house and everybody's into their high school stuff and making and all those stuff going on. I looked at my buddy and was like, "We've just been through a 3-year Technicolor adventure movie, and we couldn't even relate. We didn't miss a thing." And everyone's still in their car in their dark winter thing, you know, and I thought, wow, holy cow, did we skip the darkness? And that kind of changed my life. That kind of did. Because then I started realizing, you know, well, of course, in darkness and getting outside, we can still ski and when there's opportunities and stuff. But the wintertime in Alaska, you know, it can get to people, you know. Well, those days are gone, and I'm not suggesting that, you know, fly out in the bush and go traveling, but if we just get out there in nature, you know what I mean, and use our bodies and get endorphins, you know. Back then, there wasn't no social media, man. There wasn't all these things to get caught up in about the world and the darkness of everything, you know. In the wintertime, if the TV's on, I'm going to stop in a minute. The point of this is here it is. In Alaska, we've got all this darkness. We've got this real opportunity just to get out in the outdoors and to get away from it, shut the radio off, you know. And in the middle of winter, you know, and it really kind of changed my perspective on life quite a bit. I realized a lot has to do with right here, you know, a lot of right here, you know. We can be concerned about the world and the darkness, but if we engage ourselves, we can light it up. That was probably more than 7 minutes. That's all I got.
What a great sentiment for us here in Alaska to wrap up on. Get outside, everybody. This evening, though, get outside very, very, very incredibly carefully because it is super slippery out.
And as a special treat, before we go, we've got one short piece of prose to share with you on the theme of Lighten Up, Stories of Escaping the Darkness. A legend. A lady who hates to be introduced this way, which is the only reason I'm doing it, Mizi Hermansen.
So I would doubly like to ask you guys to twist people's arms, because whenever there's extra time, I get shoved up on stage. So let's see if I can remember this one. This is a short poem called Winter Dreams. It's winter in the great land, and the days are dwarfed by nights. The skies are lit by dancing, crackling northern lights. The river ice is snapping like beasts busting through the timber. The cold cuts through my joints. They are much more stiff than limber. The fluttering aurora catch stars in a mesh of green. My thoughts start to wander as I survey the scene. The longer days of summer now compose my dreams with visions of the sockeyes returned to natal streams. Nets flung across the water like these lights across this sky. Salmon hang like stars, flashing silver sides. The days are getting longer and soon I will be out there on the inlet, rocking on the seas. But it's still winter in the great land, and the days are dwarfed by nights. Though the skies are lit by dancing, crackling northern lights.
Wow. Thanks, Meezy, and thanks to everyone who comes. This isn't an event unless people come and listen, and every time we're so grateful to have a really attentive listening audience. Please encourage your friends to tell a tale. February 2nd, True Tales Told Live is going to be here again. And thanks to Jenny for putting this all together this time. And thanks to you all for coming. And thank you to Odie's for always hosting us. Thanks, guys. Have a great night.